We're going to get started, I think, with our program now, Coping with Depression and Sobriety. My name is Art, and I'm an alcoholic. For many, recovery from alcoholism and addiction is only part of the problem. We have many equally important and life-threatening issues of various forms that come upon us in our recovery. We're going to discuss from a very practical perspective the subject of coping with depression and sobriety. It's our hope that this discussion will lead to a better understanding of the problem, the effects of depression on recovery, the need to seek qualified professionals, the use of medication, and spiritual and non-spiritual solutions and approaches that have proved effective. We hope we can also help remove some misconceptions of mental illness and medication in the context of sobriety. I know I've had experience with many people who think that having medication is not an indication of sobriety itself, but hopefully we can dispel some of that information. And finally, it's our hope that this discussion will help sponsors and friends of persons suffering from depression as well. I'd like to introduce our panel. Tonight we're going to have Tom Morgan is going to join us. Tom's over there. And Dave Gore, Dr. Gore. He's a psychologist, psychotherapist for 30 years, or maybe more, I guess, at this point. But he's going to be devoting some of his time and his experience with treating people with depression in sobriety. I'd like to cover some of the initial literature that we have in AA, the literature, and we have some. I have some copies down here of some of the pamphlets. Here's one book. In addition to the big book, there's a pamphlet called Living Sober, which hopefully some of you have read before. There's an article in there on our topic. There's a pamphlet entitled Problems Other Than Alcohol, and also one called The AA Member Medications and Other Drugs that will be helpful to you. Again, I have a few copies here. You're free to take them with you. The big book, which is published in 1939 in the chapter entitled The Family Afterward, gives some suggestions on coping with depression and other illnesses. Quote, now about health, a body badly burned by alcohol does not often recover overnight, nor do twisted thinking and depression vanish in a twinkling. We are convinced that a spiritual mode of living is the most powerful health restorative. We who have recovered from serious drinking are miracles of mental health, but we have seen remarkable transformation in our bodies. Hardly one of our crowd shows any mark of dissipation. But this does not mean that we disregard human health measures. God has abundantly supplied this world with fine doctors, psychologists, and practitioners of various kinds. Do not hesitate to take your health problems to such persons. Most of them give freely of themselves that their fellows may enjoy sound minds and bodies. Try to remember, though, that though God has wrought miracles among us, we should never belittle a good doctor or psychiatrist. Their services are often indispensable in treating a newcomer and in the cases that are following. And Bill was very careful about that. He never belittled the medical profession in all his writings. He saw them as one of our great allies in our dealing with our various problems. In the pamphlet, The AA Member Medication and Other Drugs, there was a pamphlet created to address the issue of drug misuse as a threat to sobriety. It was a report of physicians to AA, and it was published in one of our AA conference-approved pamphlets. Now, the report from the physicians make three suggestions, among others. Number one, remember that as a recovering alcoholic, your automatic response will be to turn to chemical relief for uncomfortable feelings and to take more than the usual prescribed amount. Look for non-chemical solutions for the aches and discomforts of everyday living. Now, these are physicians talking now. Number two, remember that the best safeguard against drug-related relapse is an active participation in the AA program of recovery. And number three, remember that no AA member plays doctor. And I've had to remember that myself. I mean, I've been dealing, as you'll see later, a little later on when I describe my medical history, I thought I'd come to know pretty well how to treat my problems, and yet I still have to rely on doctors to do that for me, because I just don't know. The pamphlet, or the publication, Living Sober, which was published in 1975, is a booklet designed to offer suggestions on some of the things that AA members have been asking over the years. And one of these is topic number 23 in the book. It's called Seeking Professional Help. And it says the following, quote, "Once we have started staying sober, a lot of our problems seem to disappear, but certain matters remain or arise which do require expert professional attention, such as that of an obstetrician, a chiropodist, a lawyer, a chest expert, a dentist, a dermatologist, or a psychological counselor of some kind. Since AA does not furnish such services, we rely on the professional community for job getting or vocational guidance on domestic advice, relations, etc." And then it goes and concludes by saying, "One's need for a helping hand is no sign of weakness and no cause for shame. Pride that prevents one from taking an encouraging boost from a professional helper is phony. It is nothing but vanity and an obstacle to recovery." And then the pamphlet, Problems Other Than Alcohol, it says, it was discussing, I'm not going to discuss what it says in the pamphlet, but except to say that in the pamphlet, Bill then discussed the now current, and at that time current issue, of membership in AA for persons with more than one type of addictive behavior. And while it's a tangential issue for today's topic, I suggest that you read the pamphlet itself to get a better indication of Bill's participation or concerns for singleness of purpose and who is an AA member for that matter as well. My history of mental illness began in around 1990. I was in my late 30s. And it came upon me very slowly, very gradually. I didn't realize what was happening to me, but I just knew that life was not going very well for me. I could not deal with life very successfully, and then it ultimately ended in my attempting suicide. That began the first of my three trips to the psychiatric ward, and I was in the psychiatric ward each time for about 45 days. My first time in the ward, I was of such despair and hopelessness that all I could really do was lie on the bed, my hospital bed, in the fetal position and cry. That's about the sum total of my ability to deal with life at that point. They weren't sure what to do for me. They treated me with medications. They gave me some psychotherapy. The doctors talked with me. We had some sessions of educational sessions in the hospital. And one thing that I desperately wanted to do at that point in my life was to get out of the hospital. And so I figured out, you know, we're not stupid folks in AA, we're pretty smart. And I figured out what they needed to hear in order to let me go. And so I told them exactly what it was that they wanted to hear. And they released me from my medication and my supervision. That lasted all of about 2 weeks. I was back at work, and I just started crying. I couldn't stop. I was back to the point of imagining myself driving my car into a bridge abutment. And I realized that I had to do something about that. It was one of those moments of clarity that I got, not only in my mental illness history, but also in my alcoholism history. I had moments of clarity as to what to do next, and so I drove myself back to the hospital I had begged to be discharged from before. And they readmitted me when I told them what was happening in my thinking. Again, I was readmitted for about 45 days. This time, they talked to me about having electroconvulsive therapy, which, if you don't know what that is, it's attaching electrodes to your brain and putting to your head and inserting electricity through your brain to try to get it back to a more stable configuration. And they did that for 7 treatments over the course of 2 weeks, and it worked. I was given about a week of normal thinking until the Depression reappeared again. But it was a very important period of a week. It was a week that gave me hope that there was a solution, that I didn't always have to be the way I felt. And it allowed me the time and the willingness to allow them to experiment on me with various drugs. And it took over 6 years of experimentation before they found a combination that worked. And it worked at least for a while. Some of the medications would work for a month or two, and then they'd stop working, and they had to switch medications. That meant taking me off one medication over the period of 4 weeks, and then starting a new medication over a period of 4 weeks. So I was in limbo for about 2 months period of time during that period. I also was engaged in intensive psychotherapy during this period. I was seeing a psychotherapist 3 times a week, which is probably about the maximum allowable under the guidelines. I don't know, Dr. Gore can speak to that perhaps. But it was very necessary for my ability to get through the day. My last psychiatric hospitalization was after another suicide attempt about toward the end of the 6 year period, and it was still when I was drinking. One thing I did find was that although I was drinking as a depressant, when I was in the hospital, I was not allowed to drink, obviously, and I still was depressed. So my depression rose independently, or at least wasn't totally affected by my drinking history. I learned a couple things from my episodes dealing with treating mental illness. One, that I am mentally ill. I can say that, and I'm not embarrassed to say that. It's just a fact of my life. What do I do about that? Well, I have to seek treatment for that. I have to be willing to seek treatment for it, and I do. I learned to ask for help, which is something that I think it's hard for us all to ask for help, and more importantly, it's hard for us to accept the help when given to us. I was able to do both, and I learned that in the psychiatric hospital, and it gave me a great deal of a leg up in my recovery from alcoholism when I got to AA. And the third thing, and I didn't realize this until a while later, and this is just my experience, I had to have a certain base level of rationalization or connection to reality in order for AA to work. For many years, I was not fully connected to reality. I was on medications. I was heavily medicated. I was able to do a job, sort of, during that period of time. I wasn't totally disabled. But I had to be brought out of my deep depression up to a normal level of functionality, or at least fairly normal level of functionality, for me to get to the AA program. And I'm very happy that I was able to get to that point. My bottom with alcohol occurred in 1998. That's my sobriety date, August 11, 1998. I found myself in the living room at my apartment. I was divorcing my wife, who stuck through me all through the years of mental illness. I just decided that she wanted us to separate in our marriage, and I wasn't willing to be separated. I was willing to be divorced. One of the things that came to my mind was that if I wasn't living with her anymore, I could drink as much as I wanted. That's not a very good reason to get divorced. But that was one of my reasons. But I said that one night on my knees, looking up at the ceiling, talking out loud to no one in particular, I can't do this anymore. That was my first step. I admitted I was powerless. Just as I admitted earlier on that I was powerless over my depression, I now realized that I was powerless over alcohol. And I needed help for that. And my experience being treated for depression, fortunately, led me to the doors of AA. I realized there are people out there who can help. People who have experienced what I'm experiencing and can give me some help in that. In sobriety, I've been able to go for a period of 5 years without any medication. My doctors decided to try an experiment after a while. I've been sober for now for 17 years, and five of those 17 years, I was able to function relatively normally without the use of medication to treat my... I'm actually diagnosed as bipolar, but most of my problems come with depression. My manic episodes are not that intense. They're not that long an episode, but they do occur. But my real problem is depression. I still get depressed. I want to make that very clear. I'm not cured of anything. I still have depression. I still have manic episodes. I still realize that I know I have them. And I had a doctor who said, for people like me who've had so many episodes of attempted suicide, that probably the best thing for me is just to stay on medication for the rest of my life. And I'm willing to do that, although I don't like the side effects from the medication. It allows me to get up before you today and talk about what's going on in my life. If I didn't have the medication, I probably would be back in the hospital, because that's where my depression takes me. A second thing that's been very helpful, and I would say this, the AA 12 steps have helped me tremendously in getting a focus on life and able to live life on life's terms. It has brought me out of depression so many times when I focus on helping others. I don't feel the weight as much. So just working the program of Alcoholics Anonymous has helped me through my depression as well. Secondly, I've been able to use my experience, strength, and hope to help others. I freely admit to other people in meetings that I have depression, that I've been treated for it, that I'm not afraid of it, that it's something that can be worked through. That's my experience. I've come to the point that I can relate that to other people and help them seek the help that they need, whether it's other work in AA, in the AA program, or whether it's encouraging them to go see a doctor and have a clinical evaluation of themselves to see what if they might be depressed as well. Usually I suspect that they are, given how they present themselves, but I'm not an expert, I'm not a doctor, and so I refer them to the appropriate party to do so. And one, there are a couple things that I can conclude from saying, as I'll be introducing Tom Morgan in just a minute here. One is that it's important to realize you're not alone. There are many people who deal with this issue in recovery. And by talking together, we can help each other. We can help each other particularly by just verbalizing what's going on in our life and helping each other by just letting them know that there's hope. They got me through my first episode of a hospitalization. I had hope that there was a solution for my life, and that's been very helpful to me. And today I can say that I'm sober today due to AA, because it's helped me so much, due to the medical and psychological treatment that I've had, but most importantly, through the grace of God. I can't tell you why I've been able to get up before you today, except to say that it must be God working in my life. And with that, I'll introduce Tom.
Thanks, Art. My name's Tom. I'm an alcoholic. I'm not a doctor. Don't even play one on TV, but really it's a good thing for me to be in between Art and Dave. I'm mainly going to talk about my experience, and I would like to say I've known Art a long time, and he's helped me personally one-on-one, and I agree with everything he said, but if I say something that sounds a little different than what he said, it's only because it's my experience, and my opinion is this, my depression is, and what I went through mentally is what I had to deal with, and everybody's an individual, and so if something I say applies to you, then come talk to me. I started noticing what I call depression the first time in about the seventh grade. And it was just kind of a vague feeling of just not feeling quite normal. It was sort of almost like a pressure inside my head. Things looked a little blurry. The fluorescent lights in school would drive me crazy, and I would just go outside, and I just had these funny feelings in my head. But then it kind of went away, and then in the ninth grade, I had a really bad episode of it. I started noticing more of a kind of a nervousness, and what I came to find out was really anxiety, combined with just really negative thinking and bad thoughts, and just feeling like I was sort of scared to be involved in, you know, stuff that I'd been involved in. And I could kind of get through school, and I would come home, and I would want to just sort of, you know, get inside and lay around on the couch and watch TV, and my friends would be out playing ball or whatever, and I just couldn't do it. And I forgot to mention, I started drinking at a pretty young age. So I think part of my deal is, you know, I started drinking at age, 8 or 9, pretty much every chance I got, which wasn't often. But by the time I was in junior high school, I was drinking every weekend, and I was drinking hard for a kid that age, you know. So I think part of my deal is I messed up my brain chemistry early on by drinking heavily for somebody that age, and also, you know, doing a little bit of drugs, smoking a lot of pot and things like that. So by the time I got to the ninth grade, I was starting to have these kind of weird feelings I didn't understand, feeling pretty bad. I actually quit drinking in the ninth grade for, I don't know, it was about a year. And it's like this depression episode just kind of kept on going and kept on going. And I actually talked to my mom at the time, and I actually would go and see this therapist for a while. And I went, and it didn't seem like it was helping. And then one day, out of nowhere, the depression just lifted, and I thought I was fine. And that pattern happened over and over. I started drinking again after I started feeling good, because, you know, I'm fine. And over the next, however many years, these depression episodes would come and they would go, and they were getting worse. In 1992, I went into one. I was like 23 or 24 years old, and it lasted close to 2 years. And I mean, I had a job, had a couple of jobs. I actually quit a number of jobs because I was, I felt like it was the job that was the problem. I was, of course, drinking. So, long story short, I feel like my brain chemistry was affected by the amount of my drinking and the fact that I started before my brain was completely developed. And, it would just come and go. I finally got sober in 2003, and when I first got sober, I actually was not suffering from depression, but then my life was very stressful during that period of time, and I've come to realize that prolonged stress for me seems to have a bad effect, so I've got to take care of myself. I got sober in 03, and really at about year two, the depression came back really strong in sobriety. And it stayed with me off and on until about 8 years sober. So there's 6 years of sobriety where I'm actively involved with my sponsor. I'm working the steps. I'm going to meetings. I'm doing everything that I think I can do, and I still feel terrible. And if any of you guys identify with that, I will say, don't quit before the miracle happens, and ask for help. You know, that's what I did. At one time, you know, I have a sponsor. I've had the same sponsor the whole time. But I asked Art to kind of be my, you know, my depression sponsor. And he would come over to my house on Sunday afternoons sometimes. And you know, he shared very openly and honestly about his struggles. And it helped me a lot. And you know, I think when I hit my bottom with alcohol, I had to do whatever it took to get sober. And when I kind of hit bottom with depression, it's just like I realized there was, you know, that I had to figure out a way to get better. And over the years, a lot of things had been suggested to me, and I just wouldn't do them. Well, you know, I had taken medication, started taking medication in like 2003, and I was always trying to get off it as soon as possible. And I didn't want to take medication. Well, I kind of figured out that, you know, I had to just sort of trust the doctors. But my goal was always to see eventually if I could get off medication. And today I'm not taking medication, and I haven't for about 5 years, and I feel great. I'm doing good, but I don't take it for granted. I don't assume that I'm fixed. I know I've got to take care of myself, and I've got to keep doing all the positive things that I've been doing to hopefully stay where I'm at with my mental health. You know, some of the other things I've done, and again, you know, this is my experience. It may not be right for you guys, but I was seeing a therapist in 1992 during that real bad episode. And at the time, she suggested two things that I did not do for a long time. One was, why don't you quit drinking and see what happens? And I, of course, ignored that for another 16 years or however long that was. And the other thing she said was, you might want to consider the fact that you might have a food allergy. And I said, what is that? I do wimpy stuff like that. I can't have a food allergy. Well, in 2012, I decided I was gonna experiment with eating a gluten-free diet. And I didn't want to be gluten-free because that sounded like, you know, some sort of sissy thing. You know, I didn't want to do it. But I noticed when I would come back from lunch, my mental capacity would just drop off. I would feel terrible. Well, so I decided to start experimenting with it. And I'm a really stubborn, hard-headed guy. I would quit eating. I would cut out anything that had gluten, which was basically anything that has flour in it. And so I would eat a lot of salads, and I would do this. And 2, 3, 4, 5 days of this, and I would start feeling pretty good. But then I'd say, that's just a coincidence. And I'd eat a sandwich for lunch, and sure enough, I'd feel like crap again. I did this at least 5 times. So I finally started feeling bad enough, and I said, okay, I'm actually going to try this for 2 months. And this was in 2012. And it's hard to not eat gluten at first. But at the end of the 2 months, I'd lost about 10 pounds. I felt good. I felt really good. And I said, look, this is like AA. I don't have to know why this works. I just know that it seems to be working for me. And I haven't looked back. And I'm not saying that you guys need to eat gluten-free. I'm just saying if you're struggling with long-term depression that won't seem to go away, it might be something to try. Another thing is, I've always exercised off and on, but I notice when I do exercise regularly, especially for me, running or any kind of cardiovascular stuff, it really helps me manage stress. And it just kind of, even when I'm really in a bad place depression wise, if I go out for a 45 minute run, those 45 minutes are pretty good. You know, it sort of seemed to reset. So exercise is something I keep as a part of my program. Obviously, staying involved in AA is part of my program. And I think a huge part of my program, because, you know, my thinking can spiral into the negative pretty quickly. And if I'm involved in AA, as Art was saying, you know, helping other people, you know, all the positive stuff that we experience in this great program, that really helps me keep my thinking on a higher plane, and helps us. It's one of my main defenses against going back into that place of depression. You know, I've mentioned going to therapy. You know, right now I feel great. I've felt great really for 4.5 years, but I continue to go and see a counselor. And you know, for me, that's the right thing. I enjoy it. I've got an ex-wife and I've got kids, and you know, my kids are having struggles and this and that, and it's like, it helps me make sense of my family situation. It helps me keep things in perspective. And you know, the guy that I go see is just a really spiritual guy, and he's kind of become almost like another sponsor in a way, on a different plane. So that's another thing that's really helped a lot. And you know, once again, I think being in AA allows me to be open to these kind of things that I would never have considered in the past. You know, it's helped me lose a lot of this false, you know, macho attitude I used to have, and just allow me to be open to things that are good for me. You know, in the old days, it was, you know, like, I'm supposed to just be able to abuse my body and you know, and I'm going to be fine. Well, you know, that doesn't work for me. You know, I've got to watch what I eat. I got to watch what I drink. Too much caffeine for me. And this is a bad weekend because I tend to drink coffee all weekend long. But you know, I got to watch everything I do. My nutrition is something I take pretty seriously now. And you know, it's like taking care of myself has become pretty important. And I think, you know, again, that's a gift of the program, because before I got here, I couldn't have told you this, but I think before I got here, I didn't think I was worth being taken care of by anybody. You know, I kind of got that message growing up that, you know, really not that special. You know, I'm not really worth taking care of, so why would I take care of myself? It seemed like I was trying to destroy myself. But now I want to live. You know, I want to live, and I just don't want to just survive. I want to actually get something out of this life. And I really feel like, you know, my program involves all the things I've talked about, you know, exercise, nutrition, you know, therapy, medication if and when needed. You know, I go to church, but, you know, I obviously, that, you know, it's a personal thing. And the program. And you know, I'm just going to keep doing what's working. I don't have to know why it works. I'm just going to keep doing it. The one thing I want to share, just because this has come up a lot, and I think Art basically said the same thing, but you know, I've heard a lot of people. I've even heard people from, you know, podiums talk about, you know, you're not sober if you're on antidepressants. And you know, I'm trying not to give a lot of opinion, but I'm going to give one right here. I think that's absolutely wrong, and I'm sure Dave will back me up on this. You know, the Big Book pretty clearly says, you know, that you're to go to a doctor when you need help from a doctor, and that includes psychiatrists. And you know, I think that's a real dangerous thing for any of us who's not a doctor to give somebody else advice about whether they should or shouldn't take medication, whether they should start taking medication or quit taking medication. I mean, I've been so depressed that suicide was definitely something I thought about. Now, I forgot to mention, you know, when I was 16, my mother committed suicide, so I pretty much took that option off the table. But it was like, okay, I'm just going to suffer through the rest of my life. I'm just not doing that. But there's been plenty of times I've been depressed enough to do it. There's been plenty of times where the gutsiest thing I've done in my life pretty much is actually getting my foot out of the bed and on the floor and getting my day started because I had to take my kids to school. So I've struggled with some pretty bad depression myself. And so I don't take it lightly, and I just wanted to, you know, say that about the medication. If medication is needed, use it. You know, I'm currently medication free, but I don't want anybody to think that that's like something you should be in a hurry to get to. Anyway, that's really about all I've got to share. I just want to thank you all for being here. Thanks for AA.
Hey, I'm Dave. I'm an alcoholic. And I don't do drugs anymore, but I watch TV and I have my laptop on my lap. It's been 4 times I Googled jokes about depression. There is not one funny joke about depression. So you guys have an option. We go no joke. I could tell you a joke about addiction, or I could give you the old standby of a lawyer joke. What do you guys want?
Lawyer joke.
That's what I heard. I'm up here because Art's my sponsor, and he's a lawyer. And one day a lawyer's walking down the street. He drops dead. Wakes up. He's in heaven. He says to God, "God, how can you take me? I'm only 47 years old. God says, "According to your timesheets, you're 67. It's tough to talk about depression and have fun. And it's tough to treat depression and not take in that energy. I personally do not have a history of depression. I've been doing therapy for about 30 years. I've been sober 24. Do the math. I've treated hundreds of depressed people. I've had days where I sit across from depression for, you know, 6 hours a day, 7 hours a day. And it's beatable, all right? Sometimes it's easy to beat, sometimes it's hard. Part of the problem is you need energy to beat the depression. First thing I want to say is everything I'm about to say is from me. I'm not AA sanctioned. I'm not psychological association sanctioned. I mean, I have opinions, and that's all I could give, all right? I'm probably going to challenge some of you. I'm probably going to hear from some of you. First thing I want to say is feelings are normal. Feelings are what I believe we drank over. It's why we used to enjoy getting messed up. My first sponsor told a story where he first put a needle in his arm, and I never did IV because I'm too classy for that. And he pulled the plunger down, and the first thing he said to himself was, "I feel great." And then he realized in recovery what he should have said is, "Wow, I feel nothing." And that, to me, is what we're trying to do with drugs and alcohol. If you want to be miserable, you basically have 5 options. Be angry, be lonely, walk around with a lot of shame. Shame is defined by, "I'm not okay, there's something wrong with me." Fear, being scared. And the last one is sadness. And we talk about depression, that's sadness. But then the speaker tonight, Steve, added number 6 when he talked about being shut down. All right. You remember, I forgot how old he was when he shut down. I think it was 12. He was betrayed. He shut down. If you're walking around shut down, A, you're going to be miserable, and B, you're going to look depressed. A guy named Terry Real wrote a book about male depression. And I heard him talk once. He says, "I'm very proud to say I wrote the first book about male depression. I'm very embarrassed to say it was written in 1998. All right? So from age, 1920 is when we started psychology until 1998, we never talked about male depression. And the title of that book, for those of you who want to run out and buy it, is called "I Don't Want to Talk About It." That's the title of the book. All right? What are we doing tonight? We're talking about it. All right? I admire the bravery of these two guys because it takes more balls to come up here and say I'm depressed than it does for me to say, I work with depression. All right. Sadness and anxiety are part of life. That's it. Everybody gets sad. Everybody gets scared. That's what we do. We have good days. We have bad days. What I want to say first thing to piss off people is when I've been at treatment centers and I look and 90% of the people are on antidepressants, and there's a lot of places like that, I think that should be illegal and I think that place should be in trouble. There are people that are newly sober that are highly depressed and need medicine, but not everybody. All right? Think about it. We used to drink and do drugs as a way to feel relax, as a way to cope, as a way to connect, as a way to unwind at the end of the day, as a way to be, you know, have fun, as a way to, you name it. You know, a lot of us used to get up in the morning and start our, you know, our chemistry experiments. And when you take away our drugs and alcohol, you're going to be depressed. We're taking away your coping mechanism. We're taking away your best friend. We're taking away, you know, I mean, me and drugs and alcohol, we were like this, all right? So when you're newly sober and you're depressed, okay, deal with it. Talk about it. Most of you, I believe, would come out of it, will come out of it. The ones that don't, now that's different. But right off the bat, you know, I just think it's wrong, and I don't know how many people here are newly sober. I don't know how many of you are labeled depressed, but in my opinion, we all are depressed right off the bat. All right. I made a list. Losing your drug of choice, be it alcohol or any of its cousins, you're going to be bored. You're going to have a loss of energy, which is kind of counterintuitive because alcohol is a depressant. A lot of drugs bring you down, but you get off it, your energy doesn't go back up. It kind of stays down. You lose direction. You lose focus. Anhedonia is a fancy word for inability to experience pleasure. That's a lot to me of what depression is. I'll say more about that in a little bit. Your anxiety goes up, and then I think there's mourning and grieving. I really do think people newly sober need to mourn and grieve. I remember when I was in treatment, they made us write a letter to our disease. All right? I wrote the letter because I wanted to get out of the treatment center, but I didn't have any, there was no meaning behind it. But I think those of you that are not incarcerated that want to really wrap the head around it, write a letter to using. If you got under a year or two, write a letter. I think stuff will come up for you. Dual diagnosis, that's a really big word. That means you have alcohol and drug problems and you have mental illness. And a lot of insurance companies will pay for depression, but they won't pay for alcohol. So depending on what treatment center you go to and how they do it, you may get hit with that label. But again, this is me. I believe everybody, when they're newly sober, has dual diagnosis. You're going to be anxious. You're going to be depressed. You're going to have trouble sleeping. Appetite's going to go down. Or, looking at some of us, it goes way up. All right? When I work with somebody who's depressed and they have alcoholism, and let's give them marital problems also, or let's give them anxiety also, or they're having problems with their kids, I think a lot of therapists out there wrongly believe that if we work on the depression, we work on their marriage, their drinking's going to go down. All right? That's not my experience. All right? I believe the first thing we need to do is get sober first. That just sets the table. And then we see what's underneath. That's not easy. When you're depressed and you think alcohol's kind of getting you through today, it's hard to stop. What do you do if you are depressed? Well, and I mean you really are depressed because you've had months, you're trying the program, and you're walking around and you feel bad. Well, first thing I would tell you to do is, check your program. Are you really working your program? And that'll work sometimes. The next thing I would ask is, are you physically okay? Get a physical. Buddy of mine with 30-something years, I told him I was giving this talk. He said, you know, tell the men, get their testosterone checked. All right? That's real. That's real. You can't pray your testosterone level to come back. You can't therapize it. It's just, if it's down, get it looked at. The research shows with depression, there's three ways to treat it: medicine, therapy, or both. And research kind of shows medicine and therapy are about equally as effective. Medicine plus therapy gets the best outcome. I would try therapy first. I think our bodies have had enough chemicals in us to try this. This being, let's talk, let's work on what you need to work on. And therapies work, by the way. All right? So if you have a therapist and you guys feel like you're buddies and you're having a good time and you walk out and that's not my style of therapy. All right? I like when people leave my waiting room and I go, next, and the person looks at me and goes, like, shit, that didn't look like fun. I'm like, no, come on, your turn. But you have to have a good therapist. How do you know if your therapist is good or not? Are you getting better? Are you getting better? This is not a commercial for me and come see me and I'll give you my card. That's absolutely not what I'm here for. In fact, that's not what I'm doing. I have plenty of work. I charge a shitload of money. I don't take insurance. Many of you are constrained to find your own therapist based on insurance. That's reality. But talk to your therapist. Do you know alcoholism? What do you think about depression? How do you do this? All right? Right off the bat, talk to them. Any therapist should be able to tell you what's going on with the process. Does that make sense? I ask therapists, have you worked on your stuff? All right? Have you done your own work? I think that's important. A lot of therapists will get weird when you do that. Well, this isn't about me, this is about you. No, it's about me, but I want to know, have you done your work? I totally agree. Meds are okay. Totally agree. And anybody tells you if you're on something, you need to pick up a white chip is wrong. A couple exceptions. Benzos. Benzos are very scary drugs. And if you have anxiety, a lot of psychiatrists will give it to you, even though they really shouldn't if you're an addict. The problem with benzos is they're really effective. Benzos being Xanax and Valium. And if I get a lot of anxiety and I start taking my Xanax, it's going to work. But here's the problem. As soon as the Xanax starts leaving my body, I start having a side effect. And that side effect of the Xanax leaving my body is my body says, Dave, you need some more Xanax. You're really nervous right now. And that's a bad cycle. So you start out trying to decrease your anxiety, but the taking of the Xanax increases the need for more Xanax. Does that make sense? It's great for the drug companies. Again, this is going to be a little controversial. I don't think psychiatrists are discriminative, all right? And by that I mean if you walk in and you say you're depressed, they're going to say, here's your pills. Very rarely are they going to say, I don't think you need anything. They don't do that. That's like a foreign concept. That would be like walking into a new car dealer saying, hey, I want to buy a new Honda, and them saying, no, I think you should still drive your car for a while. They don't do that. And if any psychiatrist is hearing this tape, please don't call me. The first time we gave this talk was 4 or 6 years ago. 4 years ago. And Art asked me to pretend I was a doctor and give a bunch of symptoms so we all know what we're talking about. Here are the symptoms of depression. I talked about them a little bit before when I told you what happens when we stop getting messed up on a daily basis. So that's mourning and grieving your drug and alcohol. Depression is sadness or pervasive sadness, pessimism, which means you look at the future and it sucks, anhedonia, which is an inability to experience pleasure. What that means is if I'm depressed and my buddy says, come on out, we're going to go to pizza and a movie, I'm going to say to myself, all right, I got to get in my car. I'm going to hang out with my buddy. He's going to want to talk about blah, blah, blah. No, that's no fun. Thank you. But, you know, I appreciate the invite, but no, I'm not going. If I'm not depressed, my buddy calls me up and says, hey, Pete's in a movie. I'm there. It's going to be fun. Same invitation seen through the filter of depression. You don't want to do it, which is a bad cycle. The less you do, the more you stay in. And staying in, isolating, is a bad place for alcoholics. It's a bad place for depressed people, and it's a really bad place for drunken, depressed people. Worthlessness, hopelessness, helplessness, a lot of guilt and regret, self-loathing. We don't like ourselves. Thinking about death and or suicide. This last one's technical. Not giving a shit. All right? When you stop caring about stuff that you used to care about, you have a problem. Another controversial thing I'm going to say. When I was in rehab in 1991, this drug and alcohol counselor, who was the best counselor ever, said this to us, and I'm going to say it to you. He said, some of you are going to have depression. Some of you are going to get sober. Some of you are going to be real depressed and sober and think about killing yourself. Don't. If your choice is to get drunk or to kill yourself, please get drunk. Okay? Been around a while. There's a lot of suicides in AA. Sometimes it's really known this guy committed suicide. Sometimes it's an accident. Accident in quotes. If suicide's an option for you, please realize, you know, you could come back from a drunk. You can't come back from that. Or worse, please realize you could, you know, have a what they call a near-suicide attempt and leave yourself really hurt. All right, everything I just mentioned is up in my head. Those symptoms, worthlessness, guilt, self-loathing, all right? But then with real depression, the kind that I think, you know, we talked about earlier, it starts getting into your body. And by that I mean your energy goes down. You sleep too much or not enough. Or sometimes depressed people, they go to bed, 2 a.m, they pop up, they can't go back to sleep. Most people think depressed people sleep too much. Sometimes they just sleep too little. Can't make decisions. Wake up, you look at the shirts, you don't know what shirt to put on. Can't take care of yourself. Things like showering or changing your sheets or going to the store and buying milk, putting gas in your car becomes overwhelming. When you're at that kind of physical level where you just can't get in the shower, you need help. You can't complete tasks. You can't focus. And then this last one, feel as though you're walking through water. That's that physical, what they call vegetative symptomatology. When it's in your body, that's pain. So get professional help. What does that mean? Get a good therapist. What does that mean? We already talked about it. Get a therapist where you're walking out of there feeling like you're doing something. All right? You can't avoid pain. And I think a lot of us drank and did drugs to avoid pain. And one of the truths in life is you got to go through pain. You can't go around it. You can't avoid it. I got sober in 91. My dad died in 88. And when he died, me and my buddy, we drank a bunch of wine in his honor, his wine. And I woke up the next day, and I was shocked to realize my dad was still dead. So I had a choice, which was to mourn or grieve over my dad or not. I chose to not, all right? And then 91, in rehab, I mourned and I grieved over my dad. And then I thought I was done. And then in 99, I did a therapy kind of thing. Next thing you know, I'm melted into a puddle of tears on the floor, missing my dad. All right, and that was after he was dead for 11 years. You can't avoid pain. Therapy could take place up in your head with thoughts or down in here with feelings. Thinking, cognitive behavioral therapy, changing your thoughts is okay. It works. It actually works pretty well with a lot of depression. But I believe the real work happens down in here, all right? The speaker earlier, you know, losing his family, that hurt. I think you have to do that hard work of getting down into that pain. And I think once you do and you really do it, you're done. You get better. Deeper is better than shallower. Inertia. Inertia means a body at rest tends to stay at rest, a body in motion tends to stay in motion. If I had a boulder the size of this dais here, and I wanted to get it moving, it's really hard to move. It wants to stay still. And that's depression. If I said to you, I got a great idea, go out and walk for a half hour. Go call your friends, go out to dinner. This is brilliant advice. People pay me a lot of money for this kind of thing. But if you're depressed, you can't do that. You can't go walk for a half hour. But once you start walking, now the body's in motion. Now this boulder is rolling. It's tough to stop a rolling boulder. Does that make sense? It's tough to start, but once you get going, that's the cure for depression, in my opinion. All right. I'm going to steal a couple of your minutes because I've talked at The Rock, I don't know, 6-7 times. But I never had reactions like I did the last time because of what I'm about to say. And again, it's controversial, but it goes like this. If you got pain from your childhood, you have to deal with it. I think if I'm dealing with a normal, and by normal, non-drinking bunch of men, it's going to be a lot of people that were abused and neglected and had trauma. All right? When I'm dealing with this crowd, I would say most of you have abuse, neglect, or trauma in your background. What do you do with it? Well, one thing is you carry it around, and eventually you just run out of steam. The other thing is you do the work. And you can't inventory that away, all right? And this is what happened last time, is I said something like, if you were sexually abused as a kid, you can't think that away. You can't inventory it away. You got to do some work around that. What does that mean? That means crying and talking and confronting your perpetrator, not in real life, but within a therapeutic kind of setting. You got to get that crap out of you. So what happened after this last talk, at least 5 guys came up to me and they said, Dave, I was sexually abused. I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to deal with it. Tell me I don't have to deal with it. I'm like, okay, you don't have to deal with it. Thank you. And they walked away. That's what they wanted to hear. But what I really would have said to them is, are you okay? Are you okay? And they'd be, well, what do you mean? Well, can you connect with other human beings? Are you healthy sexually? Do you treat your wife okay? Are your partner okay? Are you present? And if they're really okay, fine. But if you're struggling with some old stuff, deal with it. That's what we're here for. Deal with it. We're brave. You guys wouldn't be sitting here almost midnight at a depression talk if you were scared. All right. So that's all I have for up here. So the plan now is we're going to stop taping and we're going to take some questions and. I thank you guys for being present. Thanks.